What is happening? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, October 29th, Thursday night. I had briefly thought, I'm like, you know, does anyone care about Panthers-Falcons? I'll just record the podcast before the game. And I record the majority of the podcast, usually the way, a little inside 3 and Out. You know, on Thursday nights, I'm not staying up till midnight to do this. I record the bulk of it during the day, or definitely from like in the afternoon before the game. Because a lot of times on Thursday night, like next week is Packers-Niners. So it's usually a pretty good game. I like reacting to it. I didn't realize who was playing till today. And I saw Falcons-Panthers. I'm like, do I even want to watch this game? And I was like, you know, I'll watch 5 minutes. Then I ended up making dinner. Then I watched the whole thing. And I was like, you know, football's a little like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's still not that bad, you know? You still enjoy it. So, have a couple thoughts on the game. Nothing really on the Falcons. I got no takes on them. They just need to get a coach. We'll dive into a lot of things going on. From Tua starting, just some thoughts on just... I know Colin had a pretty interesting take on Thursday. I've been thinking a lot about it. The trade deadline, some guys that should be moved. The Niners... Seattle, Ravens, Steelers, you know, two of the better rivalry games, three for the money this weekend. Some of my three picks. I actually give a little sleeper pick, so I got four picks. I'm 15-7 on the year. 3 and Out Podcast, if you listen on Apple or iTunes, greatly appreciate it if you leave a review. Helps with the selling of the show. Just got some numbers from the last quarter. Business is booming. I appreciate everybody. Keep it rolling. We'll keep this thing flowing. We'll keep this thing growing. And we'll just take it as far as we can go. You know, no stopping us. There's no Kevin Cash to come tap me on the shoulder and take me out of the game. I'll just keep giving takes. And I appreciate everyone listening. And, of course, at John Middlecoff is the Middlecoff mailbag. You slide up in those DMs. I answer them at the end of the show. Like I said, I don't have a take on the Falcons franchise. Though I had an agent tell me that the franchise... The situation there is not very desirable, right? They don't have any cap space. They're stuck with Julio. They're stuck with Matt Ryan. Those guys aren't tradable because they have huge cap numbers. And Arthur Blank just paid him a lot of money. But one thing someone told me, maybe I've mentioned this on the show before, I'm not sure if I have, is that a coaching agent said people are going to be lined up for that job. And several factors. Like, why would anyone want any job, right? How much are you paying? Well, Arthur Blank has unlimited amount of money. What are your resources? Again, huge cash. Where's your location? Atlanta. People love living in that area. It's cheap. The South. You can live like a king for $1 million. $1 million, you live like a king. Well, if you're coaching the NFL, you make $7, $8, $9 million. So you really live like a king. And I just think people, like, that job is going to be very, very interesting. Despite it might be shitty for a year because you're kind of stuck with Matt. You're stuck with just some of these bad contracts. But the way the NFL works, you can flush it out in a year or two, kind of reset, flush out some of Thomas Dimitroff's whiffs, and kind of go from there. But the thing that jumped out to me tonight in this game, I think you know it right away with a good coach. It just pops. And I thought, and I'm wrong, that the Panthers were going to be awful. Just, I looked at their roster. I'm like, Teddy, Matt Rhule's never coached in the NFL. Joe Brady was, you know, making a huge jump in a two-year period of time. I was wrong. Now, I don't think their roster's any good, but they are extremely competitive. I know they lost tonight and they're 3-5. I thought they'd win three games all season. And they're going to end up winning probably 6 or 7. But how competitive are they every week? How well coached are they every week? They ran a fake punt. They ran a flea flicker today. Here's what I know. Matt Rhule's worth every penny so far. Now, he's going to be like a Tomlin. He's going to be like a Harbaugh. He's going to be dependent on his coordinators. Because he's not some offensive guru. He's not some defensive guru. He's just kind of a leader and a culture guy. Well, if you're an elite at that, it works. We've seen it with Harbaugh. We've seen it with Tomlin. It works. And like what I was just saying with Arthur Blank, his owner, David Tepper, Google him, ton of cash. He paid cash for his franchise, Steve Ballmer style. When you do that, you know, I pay cash. I couldn't even pay cash for like a car. I mean, I pay cash like, I went to the Apple store. I was thinking about getting a new iPhone. And I am going to get one because my phone, I have to have my earpiece in to even talk. The speaker's broken. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just go get the iPhone 12. I go in there. They don't have the 12 Pro that I want. They just have the 12. And since, you know, I'm a media guy, I take some pictures and shit. I was like, you know, I'll wait till the 12. Then I'll go like, I'm going to go buy an iPad. How much are the iPad Pros, the big ones? I just have a normal iPad. And I look, they're like $1,300. And I'm like, do I want to spend $1,300 on it? I already got like three at home, but it looks so sweet and it was so big. These guys are paying $2 billion cash for a franchise. I'm like, am I going to pay $1,200 for an iPad Pro? I had to talk myself into it. Then I talked myself out of it. But it just the level of wealth that those two owners have is stupid. It's on the high end of the NFL, especially Tepper. And he paid big money for Rule. And I think it's pretty clear the guy's going to be an impact coach in the league. It's going to take him some time. He's going to need to get a franchise quarterback. He's going to need to get just better foundational pieces. But what he's doing with Teddy Bridgewater is really impressive. And when I say what he's doing, I mean Joe Brady. And I thought this about midway through the game. Here's what I know. I talked to Bruce Feldman on my other podcast, and we talked. He just wrote that book where it's the Ed Ogeron book. He wrote it with him, flipped the script with Eddie Ogeron. And Bruce Feldman's known Eddie O forever. And he spent like, 3 weeks or a month with LSU and around Joe Brady and obviously Joe Burrow, but a lot of time around Joe Brady. And I asked him, what'd you think of him? He said he's really impressive. Now, at the time, he was growing into the stardom, but he's like, he spent all his time in these meetings with Justin Jefferson, with Ja'Marr Chase, obviously with Joe Burrow. He was just always around his guys. Well, other coaches sometimes, if you've ever been into, most people probably listening haven't, if you go into the auditorium where a team meets, when you go into a team meeting in college or the pros, typically all the players sit in seats, the head coach, and maybe the coordinators are up front, and most of the assistant coaches, the GM in college, the recruiting coordinator, all those guys are in the back. He was like, Joe Brady was just in the middle of the auditorium with his wide receivers. That's just kind of who he is. And he's young. He's 31 years old. But we all watched his offense last year for LSU. It was incredible. It was historically great. It's arguably the greatest offense we've ever seen in the history of college football, start to finish. What he's doing with Teddy Bridgewater, no Christian McCaffrey, some running back I've never really heard of, DJ Moore, some random wide receivers, is really impressive. He's going to get interviews this January. I think it would be gross negligence not to interview him. Now, does that mean he's going to get a job? No. There are guys that have been coordinating. Brian Daboll has been coordinating longer. Arthur Smith now is in, year two for the Titans. Joe Brady, this is really his first year as a full-time coach. As a quality control coach, you're a full-time coach, but you don't have a position. He's a coordinator. He's made a fast jump. He's just getting interviewed. Now, the one thing Feldman had mentioned when we were talking to him is the one thing with Sean McVay, and you see it, he's got a huge personality. Joe Brady is a little introverted in terms, he's not some self-promoter. And I'm not saying Sean McVay is either, but Sean McVay is very comfortable in the spotlight. And I think Kyle Shanahan is probably a good example for Joe Brady. Obviously, they came up different ways, but I don't think Kyle is some spotlight seeker. He's not some leaker to the media. He's definitely not some front-running guy when it comes to worried about all the stuff outside of his building. And it's worked out fine for him. Now, his personality, I've had a front-row seat. He's just been very comfortable in his skin the whole time. I don't know. I've never watched Joe Brady's really his press conference as much. So there's more to being a head coach than just the X's and O's. But from the X's and O's and running an offense, and clearly just now he's building from what he did at LSU was historic. What he's doing at Carolina with, a dull knife going into a gunfight is impressive. I just think you're going to hear his name in the cycle this fall. And eventually, and this is the one beef that I have with those type coaches, John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, and Matt Rhule, is they are coordinator dependent. Now, for example, John Harbaugh's been lucky. His coordinators don't leave, right? Greg Roman can't get a head coaching job. Wink Martindale, no one wants to hire a defensive coordinator. Tomlin, they've done a pretty good job of recycling guys, elevating guys, and it's worked out pretty well, pretty consistently. Now, they've had a Hall of Fame quarterback for over a decade. So it's probably, you saw with the Ravens going through the Flacco years, it got a little dicey there. And that's the one thing when you have Andy Reid, it's why I always lean, if I'm going to go with a coach, I want him to call a side of the ball, or at least have the ability to. Eventually, if Belichick doesn't want to do it, whatever. But if Belichick ever needs to be the defensive coordinator, he can do it. I was looking the other day, I was like, who was the defensive coordinator for USC when they were kicking the shit out of everyone in the mid-2000s? Because I wanted to look at the coaching staff, when Sark and Lane and Eddie O were there. I was like, who's the defensive coordinator? Oh, it was Pete Carroll in 04, 05, those years. He was the defensive coordinator, Pete Carroll. So people are like, what does he do now? Well, I don't know. When I left the Combine one year, The irony is I flew back to the Bay Area from the combine, and we had to have a connecting flight to Houston. And on my flight, on both flights, was Jim Harbaugh. And this was like 2012 when Harbaugh was kind of becoming like Jim Harbaugh. And on the second flight from Houston to San Francisco, Harbaugh was not even in first class. He was in the middle seat with like this Asian couple. And if I didn't have an iPhone at the time, you could just see his big ass head. He had on his outfit in the middle flying home from the combine. I don't even know how I got off on that rant. Because as I was walking to my flight out of Indy to fly back to San Francisco, the other flights headed to the West Coast. There was Seattle. And obviously Pete Carroll was flying to Seattle. And he was at a table with some of his defensive staff. And I remember kind of walking slow. Again, I'm working in the league. I was still kind of in awe around some of these guys. Like, I was numb around, like, Coach Reed and the guys on our staff. But whenever you run into Jim Harbaugh or Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick at the combine, hell, I still am. The last time when I went, this, you know, first time you meet new people, it's always kind of cool. It's like, oh, there's Mike Vrabel, right? Or there's Jerry Jones. When you just, you know, just, we're all humans. You know, I don't act like I'm cool enough to be like in awe of this. And I definitely was at the time. And I vividly remember looking down and he had like a napkin and he was drawing plays in defense. And that was right, that next year was right when they started getting really good. You know, they had Earl, they had Sherm, they had Cam Chancellor, they got Cliff Averill, and it was on, like Donkey Kong. And they started kicking the shit out of everybody. So I just think some of these guys, like, they really have a scheme that they can go back to and they know it. Like, Pete Carroll knows that defense like the back of his hand. And I that'll be my question with Matt Rhule, but I like him. I don't see how you couldn't. And I got to say, I was wrong on the Panthers. I thought they were going to be, compete for the number one pick in the draft. And I think you see, like, Teddy Bridgewater's a great guy, super high character, solid player, you know, probably a bottom 10 starting quarterback. In a perfect world, Teddy Bridgewater's your backup. What Teddy Bridgewater would be, best backup in the league. I'd pay him like $8, $10 million. I don't really want to pay him like 20 to be my starter. I think they gave him 3 years, $60 million. I'd love to pay him like eight and have him back up, you know, my starter. I'd have no problem doing it. That to me is probably the perfect role for him. And I would imagine Carolina, you know, will be in the quarterback market this upcoming draft. If you had a chance to see Colin's show on Thursday, he had like an epiphany about Tua, about, you know, sometimes we start betting on outliers. And there's a reason in the NFL, for example, big quarterbacks tend to dominate, right? The average quarterback success are all big guys. I think 28, he said, of the 30, you know, top 30 quarterbacks of all time are tall. You know, the one outlier is Drew Brees. And I've been thinking a lot about Tua. And the best way I can equate just the situation for the Dolphins is less necessarily about him and more about the decision they made on who they picked. Because they could have picked him or Justin Herbert. And some information is in on Justin Herbert. He looks fucking awesome. And I think the biggest decision we make as human beings is who we spend our life with. It's much bigger than any professional decision. Because in a professional decision, you can always quit. You can always leave. Now you can say, well, Middlecoff, you can get a divorce or you can break up. Yeah, they get very, very personal. And when you have children and when you have a life together for a while as divorces, I'm sure everyone listening knows divorces get ugly, especially the more money you have and the more children you have. And for anyone young listening, like, it's good to date. You get to meet a lot of people. And once you find the right person, ideally, you know, I'm not married, but I'm in a pretty serious relationship right now. And you know what you look for and you know what you want out of the other person. Because when you do get married, you know, it's a very, very serious financial decision. And obviously, it's very personal. I mean, you become partners with these people in life. And I think I see a lot of people that get with someone and aren't happy. And they spend a lot of time on Facebook or Instagram looking at their ex. That's not ideal. When you're happy, you might do that a little bit too, just because you're bored and you're curious. But I've been with people and I don't give a shit about the person I just dated. Hell, I don't even want to follow them. Like, good luck to you. And then there are people, and I know people, that have got a bad breakup or a bad divorce, and that person wins, right? The person that you broke up with or you dumped gets in a better situation, and you wish you could have them back, and there's no coming back. I think we're seeing it a little bit with Brady and Belichick. Now, it's not exactly like a personal relationship, but for the short term, Brady's winning, you know? And at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in this. For the most part, there are winners and losers in life. And not often, and people often say this in business and that I've been around, whether it's NFL people. NFL people always say this. I don't know, actually, if business people always say this. When I do a deal, I want both sides to win. Most business people I know, they want to win the deal. In the NFL, they at least want to make it good for the other side because they want to keep trading with that person, right? So you never want to, quote-unquote, screw over another team because they might not do another deal with you. In business, like, someone's just going to make more money than the other person, typically. But the personal relationship, like, once you decide that person, especially if you've dated other person, you made a decision. You thought that they were the best person for you. And at the end of the day, the Miami Dolphins had a chance to pick between two people. And I think, like in relationships, the most important player that a franchise will ever draft or pay for in free agency to be their starter is their quarterback, right? He's the most important player, any sport, any position. He dictates your franchise success. You draft Rodgers, you win for a decade. You draft Russell Wilson, it basically resurrects an irrelevant franchise. You draft Daniel Jones, you might be screwed, right? I don't know. You draft Tom Brady, you become the New England Patriot dynasty. Joe Montana, right? We've seen it. We know. I don't need to lecture anybody. But you and Tua, I will never compare Tua to Joe Burrow. Now, I will just from a talent standpoint, but I can never judge the Dolphins on they didn't choose Tua over Joe Burrow. They didn't have the opportunity to choose Joe Burrow. Unlike the Chargers, which people I've talked to said that they would have taken Tua over Herbert. And I think, I would imagine most NFL teams, I'm just going to take an educated guess, 20-plus teams had Tua over Herbert. And that's fine. Now, a lot of those teams will tell you we didn't have the chance to draft them. They never get judged on them. But the one team that's going to get judged on it is the Miami Dolphins. Tua makes his first start this week. And I'm not necessarily going to judge this week in a vacuum. They're playing the Rams that are way better. It could look really ugly. But just moving forward, because Colin's theory is like, are we sure he's big enough and fast enough and strong enough? Like, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Waddle, and I'm already forgetting the other. Who am I missing? Oh, and Ruggs ain't walking through that door. So it's going to be difficult. He always had the Dak stacked to his side. And I'm not some Tua hater. I like Tua. I'm rooting for Tua. But if Justin Herbert, who's got 12 touchdowns, 3 picks, but it ain't even about the numbers. You just watch Justin Herbert. I'm watching the game. I went last weekend to Santa Cruz, sitting there on the couch watching the game. Now, like most times on Sunday, I have Twitter open, and boom, I see Richard Sherman. And Richard tweets, and Richard's hurt, right? He didn't travel with the 49ers in New England, so he's just at home. He's watching the Niner game. I'm watching the Niner game. And it keeps showing these Herbert highlights because they're playing, they're playing the Jags. And like every 5-10 minutes, they cut in, and it's a Justin Herbert just bomb. And he's like, listen. And he was smart. He's like, I'm not watching the Charger game because I'm watching the Niners. But every highlight of this kid, he just looks like a star. This is Richard Sherman, future Hall of Famer. I'm thinking the same thing. It's just some former scout guy that loves football. I'd imagine most people listening, if you've seen highlights of Herbert, let alone watched him play, you go, holy shit, they got something there. Like, we've all been watching football long enough, whether you're a 25-year-old kid listening to this or a 40-year-old. I don't think we have too many 50, 60-year-olds. You know, the demo skews a little younger for podcasts. It's clear. That guy physically has everything you want, and he has just a lot of pure talent, right? He's 67%. He's been really accurate. It just works. If the Chargers don't screw it up, and he stays healthy, they got something special. Like, what's the eye test going to look like with Tua? And that's, to me, where the pressure is on the Dolphins. Obviously, they got to put more talent around them. They got a bunch of draft picks. They're going to be in position to do that this offseason. But did they choose the right person? Because I know a lot of people in life that have chosen the right girlfriend or that became their wife and lived happily ever after, and they're a great partnership. They have a healthy relationship. Kids are great. It's just a cool couple. I've known people that have made catastrophic mistakes. And I'm sure everyone listening knows someone that went through a very, very ugly divorce. And to me, it's typically because you picked the wrong person, right? And I know every situation's different, but nothing in football, and let me repeat, nothing in football gets uglier than when you pick the wrong quarterback. Now, no one can hate on them for picking Tua. Super highly touted. Should have been number one if he doesn't hurt his hip. But the evidence is in. This Herbert guy can play. And it's their job to figure that out. Not ours. Like, we're just fans or me talking. I'm not paid to do that. And Flores, and I don't even forget the general manager's name. He's been there for a little while. Seems like good. They're doing a good job. But now is when they really get judged. Fun story when they've won, right, six of their last eight games or whatever with Fitzpatrick, and they're competitive, and they blow out the Niners, and it's fun. It doesn't really matter. It now matters. And Tua, he's got to be a star. You know, you draft a guy fifth overall. Like, you know what the Bengals do? They don't even care about the other two guys. They don't even pay attention to Tua or Herbert. You know what the Chargers do? They haven't even paid attention to Tua or Burrow. They're just happy with their own guy. They're, you know, the equivalent of, they're just head over heels right now. Are Dolphins fans in a month going to feel like that? Now, again, everything's in context. The guys you're playing with, I'm not expecting him to be as good as these two guys. But just in the future, he's going to be judged against Justin Herbert. That's who he's going to get judged against. It's like Baker Mayfield. Two guys that were drafted after, really three, and we'll see how it all plays out. Like, Baker was picked against Sam Darnold. Obviously, Josh Rosen, Baker's clearly better than, but Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson already won an MVP. Josh Allen, if he wins this week, is going to win the division. So that's just, you get judged on the people after you as a franchise and as a player. And Tua's not as talented physically as Herbert. Now, he's going to have to be, as Colin said, and this is why he's kind of selling the stock, he's going to have to be Drew Brees. Well, I know this. The last guy that I was like, this guy's going to be Drew Brees, was Baker Mayfield. Now, a huge part of Drew Brees' success is maturity, is his head. Clearly, Baker's probably not that. Tua, Saban loves him. Everyone I know that's been around him love him. Never had an issue. So above the head, feels like a pretty high-level guy. Now, on the field, can he be accurate enough? Can he be quick enough? Because we know, even if you're a great player in college, the NFL is fucking hard. Even, and it's probably never been easier to play quarterback, but it's still really hard. It's why I think when we're all watching Burrow and Herbert, we're like, holy moly, these guys look good. You know, it was like immediately, and I listen, you guys know, I wasn't the biggest Lamar Jackson fan, but it was kind of clear earlier, like, this guy's got something. Like, this guy can play. Now, can he morph into a passing quarterback and be consistent? We'll see. The Steelers, pretty big matchup for Lamar this weekend. But we knew right away he belonged. His team was way better than what Tua is coming into. But I'm interested if we just watch this weekend and really these next two or three games, do we think he belongs? And I don't know, because I already know Herbert does. Okay, let's talk trade deadline. And for a long period of time in my life, growing up, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, I loved baseball and basketball in the 90s because big trades would happen, right? Star players, definitely baseball when I was growing up, and still to this day, get traded a lot in season. And basketball, like every other year, some future Hall of Famer gets traded in the middle of the season. Probably happens less now, more in the NBA in the offseason. But growing up, it happened all the time in season. In football, it was so rare for true trades to happen. Occasionally in the offseason, a player was traded for a draft pick. But before training camp, like star players, think how many star players have been traded in recent memory in the last 5 years. I mean, just an insane amount of legit star players have been traded in the NFL. Obviously, Gruden traded two. The Seattle feels like they trade one for one every year. Clowney, now Jamal Adams. Diggs traded for a one. Ramsey traded. Tunsil traded. This is just off the top of my head. I think we all know that the general managers in the NFL, and I worked for, who was a little ahead of his time, Howie was so aggressive. And really, Andy Reid is aggressive too. And I think Belichick, like those two guys for a long period of time were always doing crazy shit, like in the 2000s. In the 2010s, John Schneider came around, Sean Payton came into his own, like moves started happening. Now, every general manager is liable to do something or get aggressive and willingness, teams that are close, willing to make trades. And I think the key, it's easy to me when you're like the Green Bay Packers right now and you go, should we trade, you know, a second round pick for some sweet wide receiver? And it's a pretty easy answer, yes. You're in Aaron Rodgers' prime. You get another weapon to go with Devontae and those running backs. Your offense is awesome. You have a chance to win the NFC. It's Seattle, Russell Wilson, prime peak of his powers. Did they overpay for Jamal Adams? you know, I'm not judging him because he's hurt, but yeah, they overpaid a little bit, but he fits their culture. He fits what they do in their scheme. I get it. I think sometimes on the flip side, teams that are really bad have always held on to players and not traded on the deadline. I'm talking star players. I think we're going to see a potentially some unique names moved. And I do believe that I'm going to give you three names. I think these guys should be moved. And if you think big picture, and that's what any owner and general manager should be doing. Now, my first team, the Texans, don't even have a general manager. But if the owner knows anything about football, and his dad has owned the team for however long he's been around the league, this is pretty easy. When you don't have any draft picks, you have to sell to get said picks. And when you're a team like the Patriots and you don't have talent on your roster, the only way to acquire talent is by trading the most talented player on your team. And it's easy for the good teams or teams that think they're going to be good to go get Jalen Ramsey, right? To go, like, this offseason, the Eagles had planned on being really good. Injuries have derailed them. To go get Slay. To make those type moves. A couple years ago, I saw it with the Niners. It didn't work out, but they got aggressive. They went and got Dee Ford. Like, it's easy for a team that thinks, like, this is the year we make the playoffs to make that move. I think sometimes it's harder for the shittier team to be like, okay, here's J.J. Watt. And let's start with the Texans. They have no cap space. Hell, they don't have a coach or general manager. But they have no cap space and they got no picks. But the most important thing is they don't have any picks. And when you don't have any picks, the only way to get picks back is to trade a big-time player. They're obviously not going to trade Deshaun Watson, and they're not going to trade Laremy Tunsil, his left tackle. The one guy that has a lot of value on their team is J.J. Watt. And he's actually played really well these last couple years. I actually think he still has a lot of value. Could you get a second and a third for J.J. Watt right now? Clear some cap space, because he makes a lot of money. It would be hard, because he has been easily the most famous player in franchise history of the Houston Texans. Houston Oilers, a little before my time, but of the Houston Texans, he's been one of the most famous players in the league. But he still brings, I mean, every team in the league that wants to improve their defense should be interested in J.J. Watt. He has position versatility, high character guy, and he plays his ass off. And I actually think he would benefit a lot from a new beginning almost. He's a free agent in 2 years, so his value, you get him this year and you get him next year. Which, if you trade a second and third, you're a team that's kind of in the window right now. To me, it makes some sense. The pushback is going to be, and everything I've read, is the owner loves this guy. And typically, the owners love their best players. Why? Because they make them a lot of money. And a big reason the Texans have won the division for the last 5 years is J.J. Watt. Right? He's won a bunch of defensive players of the year. He's been one of the best players in the league. I get it. But if you can take a step back, if you can take a deep breath, you go, your team is terrible. You're going to win 3 or 4 games this year. You do not have a first-round pick. You do not have a first-round pick. So you need to take a deep breath and realize, how do we recruit some picks? We're never going to recruit that first-round pick. The Dolphins are going to get, if the Texans go 3-13, the Dolphins are going to have like pick 4 or pick 5. That sucks. But it's water under the bridge. The milk's already spilled. Nothing you can do. I've tried to learn this in life. You can't cry and bitch and moan about things that have already happened. That's what losers do. Winners, they look forward. Belichick has made a million mistakes in the last 20 years, but he's always looking forward. And that's why, to me, I'm not sure every team in the league that needs a defensive lineman that's in the playoff mix should be all over J.J. Watt. To me, Gilmore with the Patriots is a no-brainer. I've seen Belichick trade Richard Seymour and trade Logan Mankins when they were good and they were competing for Super Bowls. He's traded great players when they had 12-win teams. In what world does it make any sense for a team that has little to no talent, who, if they lose this week, which I think it's fair to say they probably will, they're 2-5, they look destined for 4 or 5 wins. Their team just sucks. They just don't have any talent. Turns out Cam, the Seattle game, fooled us all. He's just not any good. This is the one guy that can still bring value. Now, he is 30 years old. I saw Peter Schrager do a long list of the guys in recent memory that have been traded for first-round picks, have all been 27. So I don't know if you get a first-round pick for Gilmore. Could you get 2 twos? Because he's under contract again next year. He's easily one of the best corners in the league. I think a lot of teams would be interested in this guy. I mean, he's just an elite player, big-time character guy. Belichick loves him. But I know Belichick poo-pooed it. Like, I don't know where that's coming from. Well, Bill, you trade people all the time. Why wouldn't you trade this guy when your team's going nowhere? It's the right economic move. And if anything, you've been like Warren Buffett of football. You've been all about like the economics and the value of players. And this is, he's still really good, but you're just selling because your franchise is going nowhere. And help you recoup a couple picks, maybe a second and a third. I don't know. Maybe some. I don't know how you do it. I don't think you get a one for him. Maybe you could. As another GM, I wouldn't give a one for a guy that's 30. That'd be really risky. But if he gave you four more years at elite play and you could re-sign him, I think you could talk yourself into a one. But to me, this is the guy that I think they have to trade. That'd be the Dallas Cowboys and Michael Gallup. They have Amari Cooper, and they just gave him a $60 million signing bonus. He's not going anywhere, and he's really good. And Dak likes him like he's staying. They just drafted CeeDee Lamb. Obviously, they're not going to trade him. The Cowboys, who stink. Ben DiNucci or Vinucci, I'll be completely candid. I'd imagine most people would agree with me. We'd never heard of this guy before this year. Why? We don't follow James Madison football. They could get destroyed by the Eagles, who aren't that good right now because they got a bunch of injuries. Now they're getting some players back. I think Jalen Reagor's back and Dallas Goddard's back. So if the offense is good, the Cowboys are in shambles. The one valuable piece that makes some sense to trade, because unlike J.J. Watt and Gilmore, who do have salaries, so a team would have to move some money around potentially to get a guy like Gilmore or Watt. They wouldn't have to do that with Gallup. He was, I think, a second or third round pick. He doesn't make huge money. He's a really good player. Like, when I see the Packers are interested in Will Fuller, if I was the Packers, I'd be interested in Michael Gallup. Put Gallup with Davante Adams and that run game, I'd give next year's two for that. Why wouldn't the Cowboys do that? Like, Dallas, you're going nowhere. You don't have any players. Your players are old. They don't care. You're going to have to cut a lot of these guys. Maybe you second or third. Like, if I was Green Bay, I would think about that. That one, to me, makes the most sense. The Gilmore and Watt, to get a little football nerdy, it gets a little more complicated because they make a lot of money and they got big cap hits. Now, granted, we're 8 games into the season, or I guess in week 8, so it's a prorated version of how much they've already been paid. But it is a little trickier for teams that are up against the cap. But to me, Michael Gallup is the easy one. And I think it's the right move for Dallas. Now, Jerry, very emotional. They're all these players are his, right? Because he's drafted them all. He's the GM / the owner. I don't know if he'll be able to do something like that, but if he was smart, if he could take a deep breath and realize his team's going nowhere fast, that to me is the easiest move to make of all these trades. There are two games this weekend that I'm giddy over, and I look forward to when both teams are good, because one has been a rivalry for a long time. I mean, almost 2 decades now. The other one became a rivalry when Jim Harbaugh showed up in the Seattle game, and then the Niners got shitty for a while, and it got resurrected last year. And I've always said this. I watch football. I watch it for several reasons. I like, you know, following players as they come up. I love the tactical element from the coaching staffs, right? The X's and O's. You know, probably not even that more, in that, like not deep in the X's nose. Like, I wonder what they're going to run against Cover 2, but just more what you do, how I react, plays that work, once you take it away, what do I do? Stuff that, I mean, anyone on their couch can see. It's always really powerful. And it's why the one sport, I guess Kevin Cash this week pulling Blake Snell, but you got a pretty good feel if a team's well-coached, not well-coached, and when coaches are really good, when they do, wow. I can't believe that I saw that coming. And obviously there are times, you know, in football when you just keep running the same play and shoving it down their throat. Like that's coaching too. But one element of football that I think we all kind of gravitate toward, and the reality is when it comes to violence, humans are all kind of, especially men, are drawn to it. Think about all the fights in junior high, in high school. Every kid on campus comes running around to watch two kids throw blows. Could be girls or boys. I mean, I saw them both growing up. I would imagine, depending on where you high school or where you went to high school, you saw some crazy fights. And the moment you know a fight is going to happen in junior high or high school, any kid in the, you know, close radius comes sprinting over to watch. We're all drawn to it. And there's an element of football, the big hits. It's a lot different now. Growing up, guys getting KO'd. It was an extremely violent game. You could argue it was unsafe, right? I mean, it really was. Just the head-hunting hits. Like, I think it's a positive And I'm someone that bitches and moans about when they throw, you know, unnecessary roughness or, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct when it comes to hitting the quarterback. Because I think the 99% of the hits you see on the quarterback are pretty safe. Sometimes, like, guy, you know, he slammed him into the ground. Well, no shit. He's 340 pounds, and he picked Russell Wilson up. He can't float. I don't know what he wanted to do. And I think one thing they've really done in the sport of football because of the penalty of leading with the helmet is kind of regulated that out and coached it out of the game. But the one thing this sport is it's still extremely violent because the hits were crazier probably back in the day. You know, some of the hits of guys running down the sideline on a go route and a safety coming across the middle. I mean, in the 2000s and really the majority of football, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, you may not die, but I mean, you would get fucking destroyed. Where once the hit happened, your breath, you just kind of hold, you're like, is that guy alive? I mean, you'd honestly have those thoughts. We don't really have as many of those anymore. I think we'd all agree. But I went to a Seattle Niners game last year, and the Niners defense was really good. Seattle's defense statistically was not great. The violence in that football game, I mean, I was on the edge of my seat every single play. Every hit was so physical. I was at the 50-yard line with a buddy I've got to know. He took me into a seat. They're sweet. I mean, great view. And it was just, remember, it was a overtime, Russell Wilson, they kicked the game-winning field goal. But I'll never forget, there had to be 25 plays where just the violence of the collisions couldn't have been any stronger. And I listened this week to Ryan Russillo had Willie Colon. He played offensive line, obviously, for the Steelers for a while and then the Jets. And he talked about when he was for the Steelers, and that Ravens rivalry really took off. And he described it as like, you know, some people that week, you know, got a little nervous. And Russillo basically asked him like, well, you know, it definitely wasn't you. And he's like, no, actually, I struggled to sleep that week. Because you knew when you took the field that other team was trying to take your manhood away. And I love violent football games. Watching the Steelers-Titans game last weekend, like, that is NFL football to me. Every play, I feel like guys are getting crushed. And listen, I'm not expecting these crazy headhunts. I don't even want that. I want these guys to stay healthy. I want the good players to stay on the field. But I love violent football, you know, within the rules, you know, physical hits. And the reality is we've never had faster players in the NFL, right? Just watch the combine every year. The amount of guys running 4.4s, I used to work in radio, and Bill Romanowski was part of the radio station. And I love Bill. I mean, I had a lot of fun with Bill. He's a tough motherfucker, right? He didn't miss a game. I think he held the record for like 15 straight years. If you put Bill Romanowski in a race right now against like Deion Jones and Fred Warner, and I'm talking Bill in the peak, and just players like Bill, those guys would run circles around him. Just speed. Now, they're not as big. The guys are slower. And I use this on my other podcast, Haberman Middlecoff. I use this example. If I get into a Ford truck and I hit you at 40 miles an hour, or I get into a Honda Accord and I hit you at 75 miles an hour, listen, I'm not like one of those guys. Remember those seatbelt commercials with the airbags? I don't know the exact answer to this question. I know the 40 mile an hour is going to do a lot of damage, but I know for a fact going 75 miles an hour right into you is going to do a lot of damage. That's why these guys hitting people running 4.4s, they may weigh 15 pounds less than guys used to weigh, you know, 25 years ago. But the guy running 4.7 with more weight, like, these collisions are equally as painful. Like, I went to 3 NFL games last year. The violence in these games is high. And I can't wait for this weekend to watch the 2 violent games. And obviously the Ravens and Steelers might not quite have the cachet it once had in its peak. And part of that was just, I mean, Hall of Famers everywhere, right? Ed Reed, Suggs, Ray Lewis, you know, Troy Polamalu, just some of, you know, Woodley and Joey Porter weren't Hall of Famers, but they're Hall of Damn Goods. You would not want to play James Harrison. Some of those, it was just, that game was a bloodbath. And then when the Niners in Seattle got good, and that turned into Cam Chancellor, Michael Bennett, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas versus Willis Bowman, Navarro Bowman, Justin Smith, Ray McDonald, bad guy, badass player. That thing was just like that game. It was a heavyweight fight. It was like Mike Tyson versus Mike Tyson. that if you didn't keep your head on a swivel, you were getting KO'd. And I think this Ravens-Steeler game might not be the peak of those games, but it's going to be the 2020 version. Because I'll tell you this, the Titans-Steeler game, whenever I would, and I was doing some stuff, like kind of had it on in the back, there would be a 3-4 play stretch where I was like, God, these guys are getting crushed. And the Steelers bring it. And you know the Ravens are going to bring it because Harbaugh's a crazy SOB. Tomlin's a crazy. I mean, they're perfect. The whole thing is like Tomlin and Harbaugh are a little nuts. Their team's ethos, the franchises, are a little nuts. And they both have just some physical players. I think the Steelers are a little more physical, but the Ravens' run game is completely physical. So I can't wait to watch that football game and to watch the violence on the field. Now, I don't know Seattle with Jamal Adams out, which is kind of weird. Like, Pete, what's going on with Jamal Adams? Does he have a sports hernia? Is he coming back this season? If Jamal Adams was in this game, I'd be like, let's buckle up. And obviously Sherman's out, so there are some players missing. But I didn't know, beside Clowney last year when I went to watch Seattle on Monday night, that many guys. Bobby Wagner's not quite what he once was. The Griffin twins, you know, are just okay. But when they play the Niners, they fly around and they hit people like it's 2011, 2012. And I know the Niners still, they don't have as many players right now on the field, but they are a very physical defense. So I think when, you know, football takes some hits now, and I make fun of it sometimes, you know, the Sunday night game against Arizona and Seattle had a little Big 12 feel to it. I'm a sucker for old school football. I'm a sucker for every 5 yards is contested with dudes getting blasted. And I think most football fans kind of are. Now, I want to see points. I don't want a 10-7 final. I want a game in the 20s. But I also just don't want to get first downs with ease. Like, you should go 3-and-out. Going 3-and-out doesn't mean you have a bad offense. It could just mean the defense is fucking ready to bring it. And they got great defensive coordinators. I like seeing high-level coaching on both sides. And I think the winner of these two games, obviously the Steelers-Ravens game, whoever wins that game is going to be viewing themselves. I mean, if the Steelers win, they're going to go, listen, we're the best team in the AFC, bring on the Chiefs. And if Seattle wins, they'll be 6-1, feeling damn good. If the Niners win, they'll be 5-3 and being like, you know what? You guys thought we were done after we lost to the Eagles and the Dolphins? We're back, baby. Because one thing the Niners do, a little like the Ravens and the Steelers, is they're a physical operation. And physicality travels in the NFL. Because you can play in the rain, you can play in the snow, you can play in the playoffs. It's like, if you got a big knockout punch, you know, I went to Cal Poly, where Chuck Liddell went to school. In the peak of his powers, like, you didn't want to step in the ring with Chuck Liddell. Because if he caught you in the chin, you were going to the mat. And it, shit will always travel. It's why soft teams, it's what my question on Seattle. But Seattle will show up this week. The physical version of Seattle. Just because the Niners bring that out into them. The Ravens and the Steelers, I mean, I don't know what you're doing at 10 a.m. West Coast time. I know what I'm doing. I'm sitting on the couch and I'm watching that bad boy. Okay, let's attack a little 3 for the money. And here's what's crazy. I had one stretch early, like week 2 and week 3, where I made a lot of money. And I cashed out of my gambling account for a couple grand. Other than that, I've probably broke even. I'm not following my own advice. I don't know what I'm doing when I actually bet. But if I had just followed my own advice, I'm 15-7 on these 3 for the money picks. Obviously, we've done 3 a week for 7 weeks. I gave a bonus pick. I have another bonus pick. So we'll be at 15. We'll be at 26 bets at the end of this week. And right now, coming in, we're out of 22. I've won 15 of them. I've full disclosure. I've lost a lot more money than I've ever made gambling. I'm hot right now. If I just listen to myself, I'd be way up. But let's start with this. I have a simple philosophy. I mentioned it earlier. Maybe I didn't mention it earlier. I went on a talk show today and I gave this. I've said this a couple times on my other podcasts and other people's shows. That if you give me a rivalry game, like Baltimore-Pittsburgh and like San Francisco-Seattle, especially this year, Corona, no fans, I am going to take the team that gets points because that's just good value. You know, I just think in this given year, it's really good value. Now, the Niners, +3, missing Deebo Samuel, going to Seattle with fans up there, you know, I'd say it'd be really difficult. Even though Seattle's missing Jamal Adams, they're missing Chris Carson. Now, Seattle's missed Jamal Adams for a couple weeks, but Chris Carson early on in that Arizona game looks good. I mean, Chris Carson's a baller. I'm just going with the philosophy, and I've taken the Niners, I think, the last 2 weeks. I've taken them a bunch this year. But if you can get them, I took them against the Rams. I took them last week against the Patriots, and they've obviously covered and won outright 2 weeks in a row. I'm going to ride them. And I think Kyle Shanahan, I don't know if they necessarily win this game, but I think it's going to be close. Now, the Niners are going to start a rookie running back. I just think Kyle's a magician. And I think his philosophy is going to be pretty simple. It's going to run it down their throat and keep Russell Wilson off the field and try to keep the game and then win the time of possession game. He's not going to get out in a shootout with Russell because he can't. He doesn't have the quarterback. He barely trusts Jimmy Garoppolo to throw right now. But if he can run it down their throat and he uses wide receivers, hell, he'll use Kittle, use check to run the football, control the clock. Seattle's one of the worst third down defense in the league. I had a buddy in the NFL. I texted him earlier this week. I'm like, you got any good stats on Seattle's defense? He said they are last in the league in plays allowed on defense. And a huge reason is because their third down defense is atrocious. They don't rush the quarterback. You can really control the ball. Like last week, one issue Arizona has, they try to get into a shootout with Seattle. You don't get into a shootout with Seattle. They have one of the best. Russell Wilson right now with 22 touchdowns through whatever six games or seven games. What's their record? Yeah, I guess it's six games. They're 5-1. I guess six games. Yeah, so he's going into a seventh game. His touchdown, he has as many touchdowns as Peyton Manning did the year that he threw 55 touchdowns through six games, 22. So they're on pace for, and Russell's on pace for a 50-plus touchdown season. You have a 50-plus touchdown season, you have a historic offense. Mahomes, Manning, Brady, think about the years they had those 50 touchdown seasons. You win the fucking MVP. And clearly, I think we think Russell's going to do that. But, like, you try to get into a shootout, like, he will throw touchdowns. Tyler Lockett leads the league in touchdowns. DK Metcalf has five. And, I mean, he had the one called back on Sunday night. Now, granted, the guy held, but both those guys are getting to double digits. Hell, if you told me right now, I'd say DK gets to 11, Lockett gets to, like, 14. Tyler Lockett, I looked it up this week because we did a big Niners-Seattle just kind of preview show on Wednesday on my other pod. And he has 25 touchdowns the last 2.5 seasons. I know they always say he's underrated. I think anyone listening, if you play fantasy football, you know how good he is. But he does not get the love as most players if they would have had 25 touchdowns through, I think it was 38 games. He is a dominant force. Maybe it's because he's little. Maybe it's now because they have DK. Maybe it's because Russell's such a big star. I don't know. But I'm taking the Niners plus three. I can't wait for this game. I'm taking the same logic with the Steelers. Game's in Baltimore. I'm not up to my Corona fans. I'm pretty sure they don't have fans in Baltimore. I don't think that would impact me. I just think I was dead wrong when I said last year when Pittsburgh gave up a first round for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I'm like, you guys are nuts. One of the smartest things they've ever done. Kevin Colbert is just clearly an elite GM. Their team is stacked. They have unlimited offensive weapons to throw to. Now, Baltimore's clearly good. People think, like, you're a Lamar hater. No, I think he's a really good player. I just don't think, like, he's what I'd want to try to win a Super Bowl relative to the other stars of the league. Like, I want my guy to be Russell Wilson, Mahomes, Rodgers. You got to throw to win in this league. And when he's running the ball and they can get a lead, they can beat you. They're not built to come from behind. If the Ravens are going to win this game, they have to have the lead. They're not coming from behind on them. And I think, as we saw last week, Pittsburgh's defense, Tennessee's good. Like, if you had to rank the AFC, I think Kansas City would be 1, Pittsburgh would be 1A, Baltimore would be 2, and Titans would be like 2A. And I think Titans fans would be like, how are you putting Baltimore ahead of us? We played them last year on the road and kicked the shit out of them. I'd be like, yeah, you got a point. But I think it's fair to say all four of those teams are big time. They all, you know, I don't really know if Kansas City has a major weakness. Pittsburgh would probably just be like Ben's age, and they just lost Bush. The Ravens would be a legitimate passing game when the game gets tight. And the Titans, I don't think their corners are great. But, I mean, those teams are, that's 12-win squads. And obviously the Chiefs are like 14 and defending Super Bowl champs. I'm just going the Steelers 3.5. Just on the basic logic of this game's going to be tight. I would take either team that's getting a huge, you know, more than a field goal. I just think that's the easy way to go. And then speaking of the Titans, coming off, I mean, they got pushed around for a half. Then they came storming back because they got a lot of character. They play really hard. They got a lot of good players. They're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, who probably felt like they won that game against the Browns, even though they lost. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals are going to have one of those probably 2 or 3 win seasons that they actually feel really good about because Burrow's a baller. They have their franchise quarterback, so really they just need to get other pieces. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if the Bengals ended up with, like, somehow the first... They probably couldn't end up with the first pick unless they lose out, but they have a tie, so it's not like they'd have be 1-15. They'd be 1-14-1, so if a team went 1-15, that team would bump ahead of them. But if they got the first or second pick, and it was Fields and obviously Trevor Lawrence, who just, I read earlier today, got Corona, so we'll have to see. I know they play Notre Dame next week. That's a huge game. Might have to throw that on 3 for the money. I hope Trevor Lawrence is back for that game. That was one of the best games of the season. But it's not like Clemson probably doesn't have some star. You also know you're a big deal when I think it was Garofolo and Rap Sheet are tweeting that Trevor Lawrence has Corona. Not like you know, Bruce Feldman or Pat Forty or the dudes that cover, you know, college football. It's the NFL. And that's because these guys are already, I mean, where do you think they get that information? Agents. But that's a little too inside football, but it's the game's already rigged. Like, those guys already have representation. Not that I give a shit. I don't care, but it's just, let's just call a spade a spade. It's not like Dabo's giving them that money, or I mean, that information. Not money, that information, but Clemson clearly pays a premium, which, again, I don't judge. I would pay a premium, too. It works. The Titans -5.5. I think the Titans kill Cincinnati. They're coming off a loss. They are really good. They're an 11-12-win team. I think they're going to win that division, but this is the type of team that they just manhandle. Joe Burrow has not. He's covered every game except the push week 1. I think this is a game that they just lose by like 10 points. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's just the Titans go in there, beat them. It's the one favorite I like. So I got the Niners +3. I got the Steelers +3.5. I got the Titans -5.5. And then my bonus is this. When they played week 1, the Vikings and the Packers, the final score was 43-34. Now, I didn't go to Harvard, but I can do a little math. That is 77 points. And where I do my gambling, the over-under that I see is 51 points for the over-under. I got it right in front of me. Minnesota, Packers, -6, but the over-under is 51. I'm hammering the over. They scored 77 points. Even if they don't sniff that number and they get to 60, you cover with ease. So Niners +3, Steelers +3.5, Titans -5.5. Little bonus. Again, I'm 15-7, not to brag. Not like I'm betting on myself. I should. I'm winning. Vikings Packers over 51 points. Again, week 1, they played 43-34. That equals 77. That would be 26 points over the mark right now. So I feel good about that. Okay, let's bang out a couple quick Middlecoff mailbag questions. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram handle. Easiest way to get a hold of me. That's crazy. It's like, you pull up Instagram, you never know what photo is going to pull up. I can only speak for guys, but, you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes we follow just a lot of different stuff going on. I remember when I used to sit in press boxes, either like the Niners or the Raiders, and you'd be below and you would open up the computer. And if you pull up, you know, you open up Instagram and some like naked chick on the first, you're like, oh my God, you got all these stiff media people behind you looking at you. You're like, what is this guy looking at porn? I'm like, no, it's just Instagram. Girl I went to high school with. You know, she just poses half naked on the beach all the time. Hey, John, appreciate the pot. Takes, no problem. 2 decades of being a Pats fan, had a theory about the Patriots and why everyone always bags on Bill for being historically bad at drafting offensive talent pieces. Was wondering your take on it. Could it be that Brady was both a blessing and a curse as the GOAT, in that he was an excellent quarterback and he was in the habit of elevating average semi-skilled players? Amendola, Welker fell off the map when they left him, and the Patriots were lulled into false reality of what skilled enough looked like due to Tom because of being who he was. So that as age caused a slight decline from the 30s to the 40s, they had a franchise that never adapted to what the skill player needed to be again. In short, did Brady's greatness at the position overshadow the need for an amazing or exceptional wide receiver for so long, the Patriots as a team forgot what it looks like in a draft. Thanks for reading. Keep up the good work. So basically, to sum up this question, you're saying because Brady was so good, they didn't have a great feel for like drafting even like a Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams, let alone, you know, an elite guy would look like. I would say maybe, but if you look at Bell's history, he was never good at drafting wide receivers. My pushback, though, always is this. I think he won the AFC East. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's 8 straight times. It might be 7. He went to 9 Super Bowls because they won 6. I think he went to 12 conference championship games. That means every one of his first-round picks, I would say, in the last decade, has been between 29 and 32. Beside, obviously, last year, which was in the mid-20s. But do you know what else that means? That means every one of your second and third round picks are at the end of the round. He never picked, not once in the last decade, in the teens. And that doesn't just affect the first round. I'm not trying to defend. Bill's had some bad drafts. And I remember being in the league. He had a guy drafted, I think my second year, we didn't even have on the board. And the guy ended up being terrible in like the second or third round. So, I mean, he drafts weird guys. Maybe it's arrogance. Maybe it's... I don't dispute he's the GOAT, but I think sometimes drafting, I don't know. I don't quite understand what he drafts for. Like the Steelers, the Ravens, like they draft blue chip guys. Belichick like drafts different type players. You do need a lot of talent. Now, he also drafted talent over the years, right? He drafted McCourty. He drafted Hightower. He drafted Jamie Collins. He drafted Thuney, the guard this year. He drafted Cannon, the guy who got cancer, who's not playing this year, the offensive lineman. He drafted Gronkowski. He drafted Hernandez. He drafted Edelman late. But you'd say that's a little bit of luck that he turned out to be that great and probably a benefit of Tom for sure. I don't think he knows what a good wide receiver looks like. I think that's fair. Even though I do think he knows what a good wide receiver looks like because he schemes against them 16 times a year. His best attribute is like he takes away the best wide receiver. So he knows what Tyreek Hill, what Antonio Brown, what Devontae Adams, what Keenan Allen. He fucking plays against all these guys. I don't know why he can't draft the right one, but he definitely knows what they look like because he plays against them all season long, and he's a defensive guy. So I don't know. I think you're kind of onto something. They definitely got away with more with Brady, and Brady masked a lot. So did Bill. But I do think their talent misses on offense, for sure. Brady helped them make up for that. And ultimately, Bill could figure out the defense. And for the most part, right, they've been good on defense for the last decade. But definitely the last 6-7 years when they won three more Super Bowls and went to another and lost to the Eagles. So I don't know, man. The N'Keal Harry, I like N'Keal Harry. I think I'm pretty good at wide receivers. You know, I'm just a media guy, former scout, businessman now who sits on my computer and talks into a mic, but I was all over Devontae Adams, love Juju Smith. Keenan Allen, I originally had a first, kind of got talked out and moved him way later, but way later, I mean early third. I was right on that one, peer pressure young, wrong on that. I don't do peer pressure anymore. So I don't know. It's bizarre for sure. My question is for the mailbag is, do you think the 2021 quarterback draft class is as good as the one that brought us Lamar, Josh Allen, and Baker? I feel like Lawrence and Fields are obviously touted as high-quality prospects, but this year is also full of guys like Trey Lance that I feel could be good in a super successful in the right situation. What are your thoughts? Also, Zach Wilson from BYU looks really talented. Yeah, I think the top two guys could be really good. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence tested positive for Corona. Missed this week. We'll see, you know. They play Notre Dame next week. Who knows? I don't even, it's Thursday night. I can't even begin to speculate. There were some rumors that he might be back. That'd be a big game for him. But the rest of his games this year don't matter. He's going number one. Justin Fields is going number two. Unless Trey Lance or Zach Wilson shoot up the board. But yeah, I think this year has a chance to be another elite quarterback draft. Here's what I know. There's never been a better time to find quarterbacks. The quarterbacks in college football right now, it translates to the league because their offenses get coached by NFL coaches, steal the same offenses. It's all the same. It's never been easier. You know, it was really hard to do like what Steve Young and Troy Aikman and Brett Favre and those guys were doing. just watch football now. All these quarterbacks are making crazy plays. It definitely was not this easy 25 years ago. And part of that is you would get killed. I mean, they would literally slam you on the ground UFC style, like they're Rampage Jackson or something. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater took a cheap shot tonight. The dude immediately got kicked out of the game. Think how many cheap shots growing up, if you're, you know, my age or in your 30s. We saw, like, even in the 2000s, dudes would get crushed. I mean, crushed. You hit someone late, you're gone. You're kicked out of the game. It's just guys don't do it because there's too much. It's obviously safer. I guess it's just, you're not as worried. I mean, I think if you played in the 90s, you're super locked into the game plan and trying to make plays, but you're also like, if you're a quarterback, always looking out of the corner of your eyes, like, someone going to kill me? Like, literally, is someone going to snap my leg or slam me into the ground? They can't do that now. But overall, yeah, I'm with you. This quarterback class looks pretty good. I believe the Packers need an inside linebacker a lot more than any other potent wide receiver. Do you think there is any impact inside linebackers the Packers could add before the trade deadline to shore up their interior defense? Well, if the Falcons, I'd trade a second-round pick for one of their guys. They those two linebackers can fly. I like those guys. Could you get Deion Jones? Would they trade you that? Would you trade a first-round pick? Maybe not first. Would you give him a second-round pick for that guy? Because I'd think about it. The Vikings, they wouldn't trade him to you. Texans, I think they have, what's his name, the kid from Mississippi State. Yeah, I mean, probably not. Linebackers, like legit starting middle linebackers, don't get traded. DBs, wide receivers get traded at the deadline. Maybe a pass rusher, but a middle linebacker usually does not. Hey, John, Mexican fan of the Three and Out podcast. Appreciate it, Tony. Quick question. Would a move for Matt Ryan to the Cowboys work, sending Dak to Atlanta? Thanks for the content. Yeah, I mean, watching Matt Ryan tonight, he looks shot. Dak Prescott, I mean, he's a free agent, so that's not happening. Okay, last question. I know you always talk about how Vance Joseph is one of the worst defensive coordinators in the league. I'm a Cowboys fan, and I think Mike Nolan has stolen that, by the way. I'd probably agree. Was Joseph mixing up the blitzes last night and disguising who was rushing actually impressive, like the broadcaster said? Or was it more of a bad game from Russell Wilson? Collinsworth talked about he was reinvented football. I think Vance did a really good job in that game of showing crazy looks. It is a little Todd Bowles-like. They got back to kind of the Arizona roots when they were really good. You put like seven guys in the line of scrimmage, and you got no clue who's coming. And when Buda Baker is the guy that's coming, and you're only rushing three other guys, and they kind of like, move the line to the other side, you know, and they change the protection, and Buda's coming free, like that is, to me, a Todd Bowles special. And he was really good in terms of that. Now, the kid... Like, Isaiah Simmons has been a bust. And when I say a bust, like, I don't mean he's, like, you can't be a bust halfway through your rookie year. What I mean is he's been terrible. He struggled to get on the field. And I had friends, and I'm not putting this on Vance Joseph. I had friends tell me he was the most overrated prospect they remember in, like, the last decade. Because the media was all blowing him like he was a top five player. I had friends that thought, like, he's a third rounder because he doesn't have a position. Now, he made a really nice play in that game, that pick he made, where he dropped back in his own coverage, and he looked huge, and he picked Russell off. But he hasn't been playing snaps on defense the last couple games. He doesn't get on the field. And it's not like they have a bad defense. So if Vance Joseph can get him going and work him, I'll give him a lot of respect. Because my friends in the scouting community did not like Isaiah Simmons. Media loved him. My friends don't. And I talked to a lot of people with Super Bowl rings. So my friends know what they're doing. And I don't claim to be the end-all be-all because I just kind of watched him probably like most of you on TV at Clemson. I was like, I think he looks pretty sweet. But he's not a middle linebacker because he's not physical enough. And then he's not a safety because he's not fluid enough in space. So he's just kind of this hybrid player. And with a hybrid player, the reason he's not playing is because it does take a talented defensive coordinator. Like Buda Baker is not a hybrid player. He's a physical safety. They can play in space and rush. Like, Buda Baker would play in any scheme. Buda Baker's just a baller. I mean, that guy's just good. Isaiah Simmons is not. And I they've struggled to use him. Why does their defense suck? Well, I don't know. They just took a top 10, you know, in theory, dude from Clemson. Can't get on the field. Like, doesn't that reflect the defensive coordinator? Now, he's not picking the players. That's the GM. But, like, now you could argue, well, John, you just said you thought he was overrated. Well, I do. I mean, I don't think he's that good. But if Vance Joseph is some wizard, he'd figure out a way to use him. I think Vance is the final score. What was the final score? 35 to 38 to 34. I mean, the score was in the mid-30s. It's not like there was no defense being played. So he made a couple plays, like blitzing Russell, but it was 27 to 17, like going into the fourth quarter. I mean, Seattle was scoring with ease. You know, a lot of people were like, you regret what you said about Vance Joseph? Just because you win the game, if you're the defensive coordinator and you give up a ton of yards and points, like, your job is to not give up points and yards. That's your role. Appreciate everyone listening. Three and Out Podcast. Go to Apple iTunes. Subscribe. Like it. And yeah, have a great weekend. Keep your head up. Stay smiling. I heard it's going to be something important is happening next week. And I'll talk to you before that, though. Be out on Tuesday. Podcast. Adios. See ya.